Wisconsin Public Radio's Southwestern Bureau in La Crosse. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall, and we're talking for most of our show today about COVID-19. We're also going to be talking about flooding a little bit later, so stay tuned for that information and what you need to be aware about in terms of ongoing weather concerns for people. Right now, our attention is turned to COVID-19, and this week we're starting our coverage with Cooley Cap, an organization that we've heard from many times here on Newsmakers, and its executive director, Hetty Brown. Hetty, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Ezra.
Your organization is no stranger to assisting people in need, and particularly low-income individuals, but not always exclusively low-income individuals. And now that COVID-19 is creating new pockets of need throughout our various communities, Cooley Cap is once again there to stand in the gap on behalf of as many of those people as possible. So let's start off for people who are unfamiliar with just sort of an overview about who Cooley Cap is and what you do.
Yeah, thanks. Cooley Cap is a community action agency that works to address poverty in the Cooley region, particularly in the areas of Crawford, Monroe, La Crosse, and Vernon counties. So we offer over 20 different programs to help address the underlying causes of poverty, but also to help people, whether it's with weatherization on their homes, accessing higher wage jobs, accessing transportation, housing, food security, and more.
In light of the crisis that's been going on for a lot of people, it's in our community not really so much of a healthcare crisis, although there are a number of cases of the illness. But because of the precautions that are being taken to stop the spread, it's really causing economic difficulty for a lot of people.
Absolutely, Ezra. We see people coming to us for help that may have not ever come to Cooley Cap for help or any other social service agency for that matter. We see people who may have made a moderate income or salary before and maybe even have had a savings account to fall back on. But they were laid off weeks ago and they haven't had any income coming in. They haven't received any unemployment benefits or any of the benefits passed recently by the federal government, and they're starting to fall behind on their bills. So we are trying to help those individuals, in addition to the people that we normally see needing assistance for our services.
So let's talk about some of the programs that you traditionally offer and see what ways people affected by COVID-19 related difficulties might fit into those existing programs. What are some of the things that you're known for offering that people might be aware of?
Well, we have, like I mentioned earlier, we have over 20 programs to help people who may be struggling financially. And what we've seen in response to the COVID-19 pandemic is that many of the state and federal partners that we work with to offer these programs under normal circumstances have updated eligibility requirements to allow more people recently impacted by this crisis to access those programs. So I'll give an example. Our weatherization or energy services program, which helps people access help paying their utility bills, access emergency furnace repairs or replacement, and other weatherization services on their home. Well, the income eligibility requirements have recently been updated by our state and federal partners to allow people recently laid off to access that program. So while we normally offer that program, now more people may be able to access utility bill assistance or energy assistance because of that eligibility upgrade. So weatherization is a program that people absolutely should seek assistance for if they have recently found themselves in an economic situation where they may not be able to pay their utility bills or for a furnace that might be in need of repair. Same thing with our food pantries. We've extended food pantry hours in Sparta and Prairie du Chien, and many food pantries in the area have extended hours to allow more people who may not usually use the food pantry to access the food pantry. So there are a number of programs. We have housing programs, low-income housing programs, transportation programs. Pretty much any of our program that we normally offer there's not only still available, but we may be able to assist people even if you haven't taken advantage of those programs in the past.
You mentioned as a specific example the weatherization program. So let's just keep with that example in mind. You talked about one of the adjustments that some of your partners are making is offering slightly different income requirements so that people who are more recently laid off might be able to qualify. Is that how do you talk about those income requirements? Is it like you an individual making less than X number of dollars a year, or how does that work?
Yeah, it depends on the program. So we offer a number of programs that are funded through the state or the federal government. And each of those programs carry different eligibility requirements. It might be a percentage to the federal poverty rate. So it's based on an income measure for your family, based on your family's size as compared to a federal poverty measure. Some programs look at your income and your household size as compared to the county median income or the state median income. But what's really been interesting to see this time is the income levels may stay the same as far as eligibility, but what our state and federal partners are allowing us to do a lot of times is instead of taking an average income for a certain number of months, say for the past 3 months or 4 months, they're allowing us to take a one-month snapshot. So if you were laid off in mid-March, which many people were who are now coming to us for assistance, then if you're applying for benefits in April, we can do a snapshot of income over the previous month, which will put your income level a lot lower than it would have been if we were to take a three-month or four-month snapshot. So like I said, it's different for every program. So if someone is in need, if you're struggling to pay utility bill or a car payment or housing payment or rental assistance, I absolutely would seek out not only assistance from CoolieCap, but other agencies that are here to help. Because if you didn't think you were qualified before, you might be now.
So in terms of rental assistance, I'm thinking of the different housing situations that people might be in. Some people are in a more traditional, longer term, you know, where they've leased an apartment for a particular amount of time. Some people are on a month to month rental basis with a long time landlord who does that sort of thing. Some people are in a less official arrangement where they might be splitting the rent with a friend or family member or something like that. What are the requirements for someone to apply for rental assistance?
Once again, it's very program dependent, and it's also county dependent because different organizations offer rental assistance in different counties. A great resource in our community is the Great Rivers 211 database. People can go online and access the database or call 211 and tell them where they live and that they're seeking rental assistance. And 211 can refer you to the right agency for that help. But right now, we're in a period of time that is somewhat unprecedented because the governor of Wisconsin has issued a moratorium on evictions right now, especially due to the inability of people to pay their rent. So right now, people that have lost their job or are finding themselves at reduced income cannot be evicted because they're not able to pay their rent. Now, there are other criteria and other considerations, but people may be able to stay in their housing even if they're not paying rent right now. The downside is that you will be expected at some point to pay your rent. And, you know, a lot of people in the Cooley region, Ezra, are already living paycheck to paycheck. Actually, about a quarter to a third of all of our residents in the Cooley region were already living paycheck to paycheck before this emergency, not making enough to cover even some of their most basic expenses, let alone save for an emergency such as losing their job unexpectedly. So what we're seeing is people in that situation, even though they may not be evicted right now, this situation is going to put them further and further and further behind on their rent payments and other critical bills so that when this moratorium is lifted, they may still be evicted for inability to pay if they're not ready to make those back payments or they're not making payments as they go. So we are encouraging people to still try to stay up on your bills, to still seek assistance if you need help staying up on your mortgage or your rent or your car payment or other critical bills, because we don't want people to be in a more detrimental financial situation in the future.
We're talking to Hetty Brown today on Newsmakers, and Hetty is the executive director of Cooley Cap Incorporated, and we're talking about that organization's response to COVID-19 and the services that they're able to provide people who find themselves unexpectedly in need. We're going to talk to Hetty for much longer, and that's continuing after a brief time out here on Newsmakers. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, or if you'd like to listen to a previous episode of the program, you can find all that information on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. Our conversation with Hetty Brown continues in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios, and I'm joined via telephone by Hetty Brown, the executive director of Cooley Cap Incorporated. We've been talking about that organization's response to the increased need created by COVID-19, and we're talking this time more specifically about a couple programs that have been created or expanded specifically in response to that, and also some news this week that's brand new about how those programs can assist even more people. So, Hetty, thank you again for being here, and let me just start by asking about the financial assistance program that has come up in light of COVID-19. Start, let's talk about that first.
Well, at the end of March, we launched the COVID-19 financial assistance program through Cooley Cab. And the program was originally funded by the La Crosse Community Foundation, the Great Rivers United Way, and the Viroqua Area Foundation as a way to provide bill pay assistance, critical financial assistance to people who had either lost their jobs due to COVID-19 or had significantly reduced work hours because of the pandemic. And the program really was meant to be short-term cash assistance to help people pay those critical bills until their other benefits kick in, such as unemployment benefits, which we're seeing a delay on. The Wisconsin legislature has yet to take action to waive the waiting period for people to receive unemployment insurance benefits. And the federally passed CARES Act, which has a stimulus money to provide benefits to people who are unemployed, it just takes time for that money to reach local communities. So the financial assistance program is there to help people pay bills such as rent or mortgage or car payments or even prescriptions or healthcare payments until those other benefits kick in.
Is that kind of program available to all kinds of workers, or is it limited to full-time workers, or how does that work?
We do set some income guidelines, pre-event income guidelines at 250% federal poverty rate, but that is based on your household size, and we are able, because of our funding sources, to be flexible there. We set original income guidelines because we want to make sure that low to moderate wage workers had access to the fund, because we recognize that those are the individuals that may not have a large savings account to fall back on until other unemployment insurance benefits kick in. However, it really is dependent on the situation, your household size, and the bills that you need covered. So I would encourage people to apply for the program if they find themselves in financial need to pay critical bills. In addition to cash assistance, we are offering some other resource assistance as well. We have financial counselors on staff that are helping people create or adjust their household budget for this emergency. We're providing referrals to the unemployment office and other local agencies that are providing assistance. We're providing a packet of information that can help people find ways to save or cut back on expenses during this period that they find themselves unemployed. So it is a full service program in addition to the cash assistance that we're providing.
So I know it depends on household size and different things like that, but is there just in general terms, is there a ballpark way that we can kind of help people understand what that federal poverty line is so they can help to determine whether their family might fit within it? Like, do you know what that number is for, like, a family of four or something?
Yep. For a family of four, 250% of the federal poverty rate is $65,500 annually. So say you have two working parents and two kids in a household. If that household made $65,500 or less, you can qualify for this program. A single person, the 250% of federal poverty rate is $31,900 a year.
Okay. So that's helpful information, because some people might see the total amount of money that they make in a year and say, yeah, it's hard for me to make it on this, but surely I don't qualify mm-hmm. under the poverty guidelines. And it's important mm-hmm. for people to recognize, I think, that maybe they shouldn't self-exclude from a process like this. If they feel like they're in need or feel like they're having difficulty, maybe they should reach out and see what they qualify for.
Absolutely. And like I said, this program is offering other resources as well. We provide a guide to help people with emergency budgeting, household budgeting. We offer referrals to other agencies and other programs that can offer assistance, and a number of other programmatic assistance. So I would absolutely encourage people to apply. All the information can be found on our website, cooleycap.org. There's a page for COVID-19 assistance that they can find right from our homepage, and it explains the financial assistance program. There's a simple online application that people can submit, and we are turning around application approvals within 1 to 2 business days. So we're moving very, very quickly. The same website also lists other resources that we're providing specific to help people that may be struggling due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
So you launched this program in March in La Crosse County and Vernon County, and some in some news this week. I should have a breaking news fanfare here. You're announcing this week that you're able to extend those benefits. Talk about that.
Yes, we're very excited to be able to expand that program now to Monroe County and Crawford County, starting this week, due to some very generous grants from the Crawford County Community Foundation, as well as the Great Rivers United Way and other anonymous donors. So because of that funding, we are able to also offer this now to Monroe County and Crawford County residents who have found themselves unexpectedly unemployed or with reduced work hours. We can give them the same financial assistance as well as the other resources that I discussed.
You know, it's not lost on any of us. You know, we've all seen the list of businesses that are and aren't open and the services that they're offering. You know, some of those businesses are still able to make a little bit money and hopefully tide themselves over until this has ended and things return to normal. But some of these businesses are just going to be hanging on by a thread after this is over, if they're able to reopen at all. I'm thinking of, you know, my barber is closed, and you know, all mm-hmm. these small businesses that don't offer what are known now as essential services. So talk mm-hmm. about the different things that you're doing to help the small business community.
I'm glad you brought this up, Ezra, because this is just a devastating situation for small businesses across our region. And under normal circumstances, CooleyCap does provide small business assistance. We offer programs to help businesses get started. We offer grant programs for pop-up shop programs and expansion programs. We offer entrepreneurial development programs and other training and assistance. So we have a very strong relationship with the small business community, and we also want to make sure that we're helping them through these challenges as well. And a couple of things to note about small business owners. A lot of small business owners aren't qualified normally for state unemployment insurance benefits. And so they're having to wait for the federal allocation of stimulus money that was recently passed by the CARES Act in order to access any type of unemployment benefit. But that money has not hit our region yet and takes time to get the money from the federal government to the state and for the state unemployment office to update their processes to allow these small business owners to access those funds. So that's one of the reasons why CoolieCab wanted to be responsive to their needs right now. So the first thing I'll say is the financial assistance program that we're offering to individuals to help them pay critical bills. We also encourage, if you own a small business that has been closed down because of this and you need help with your personal finances, we also encourage them to apply to our financial assistance program so that we can help them pay their rent or car payment or mortgage payment. And we have had several small business owners come through that program already so that we could help them with their personal finances as they're also trying to keep their household afloat and keep their business afloat. But for larger needs, CoolieCab is offering a small business revolving loan program. This is a revolving loan fund that we usually offer to small businesses in the area and particularly in rural areas. But for this situation, if there's a business that's suffered economic injury due to COVID-19, we are now offering zero interest revolving loan revolving loans with deferred payments, and we have waived equity requirements. So some of the normal parameters that you might see with rural small business loans, like small interest rates or payments every month, we're waiving some of that where we can to help get the money into the hands of the small businesses that need it.
So what's the application process for a small business owner? Is it any different from what individuals would go through?
Slightly different. And once again, people can learn more by visiting our website, CoolieCab.org, and going to our COVID-19 page. And we provide the Small Business Assistance Revolving Loan Fund on that page. Businesses should be able to provide a business plan, some profit and loss information, like year-to-date profit and loss information, and other information to us regarding their staffing levels, how many employees they have, any outstanding debt that they have. This is very similar to any type of information that people would have to apply or bring if they were to approach a bank for a loan. It'd be very, very similar, but instead of going to bank, you'll be coming to CoolieCab because we operate the loan. And we have someone on staff who would work with each business owner on filling out that paperwork, making sure that they have everything in line so that we can offer those loan dollars.
Speaking of CoolieCab, back to sort of regular times before all this, mm-hmm. in an average, I don't know if you want to talk about it in an average year or an average week or month, how many people mm-hmm. are you touching each period with the various services that you offer?
Well, in 2019, we served over 21,000 people across our 4-county area through over 20 different programs. We fully expect it to rise this year. We've already seen pretty large increase in the number of people that we're serving at our food pantries. As I mentioned, we extended our hours. Now both of our food pantries are open 5 days a week with curbside delivery, and we're also offering home delivery for people who cannot or should not come out to the food pantry to get food. And while a typical day we may see, 15 to 20 households, on a typical day now we could see up to 50 households, even with those extended days. So we expect that the number of people that we serve will be drastically increased, especially through this time period.
I know calls are up, and I know many days it must seem like you're inundated by all of this. But what do you have to do to make sure that you are reaching the people who need this information the most?
Well, we're trying to be very active on social media. We're posting almost daily about programs and services that are offered. We have a COVID-19 page on our website that can help to direct people to places or to our programs where they can get help. All of our offices are closed to the public, but we are still operational. All of our staff are working from home or working from our food pantries, so people can call us and get assistance. They can email us online or send us a message through social media, and we are here to help.
You know, there are a lot of people struggling, and it's, you're not a stranger to that environment, but oftentimes these challenges bring out the best in some members of our community as well. Have you seen bright spots, people helping people, other things that have brought inspiration to an otherwise troubling time?
Absolutely. Actually, I was helping out in our Sparta food pantry all day yesterday, and we served, just in a matter of a couple of hours, 24 households came up a curbside to get food. And we're giving extra amounts of food these days so that people don't have to visit the food pantry as often. We're trying to help people stay safer at home and comply with the governor's order by giving extra food. Well, after only a couple of hours, our shelves were starting to look pretty bare. We've increased food deliveries. We've been out purchasing food at grocery stores, but it's still hard to keep food in our food pantries. And we were just trying to create a strategy on getting more food in, and a very nice gentleman pulls up in a minivan. His van was full of food donations, everything that we needed, and they had collected it in the community from their neighbors who wanted to help out and didn't know how, and they knew our food pantry was operating 5 days a week. So he pulled up with this van full of food, and it completely restocked all of our shelves, so they're ready to serve more families today. It was very, very heartwarming.
That's fantastic news. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So speaking of people reaching out and helping, I know a lot of people want to help, and in spite of the inability to maybe volunteer under more normal circumstances, there must still be ways that people can help. What are those ways that people can help your organization?
Thank you for asking. Well, as I mentioned, we're having to purchase a lot more food these days because we just can't get enough food in through normal channels in order to keep our food pantry shelves stocked. So if people would like to make a cash donation, they can donate to our food pantries. They could also give a cash donation to help support our financial assistance program. This is the program that I mentioned earlier that provides us direct cash assistance to people in highest need. People can donate right on our website, coolycap.org, or they could, of course, mail a donation to us as well. If people are interested in volunteering in our food pantries, they won't have to interact with the public at all. We're trying to keep our volunteers and our staff safe, but we could always use help unloading trucks and stocking shelves and pre-packing boxes of food as well. So we are taking volunteers if people are interested in Sparta or Prairie du Chien. Otherwise, they can make a cash donation to help some of these programs on our website.
And that is, one more time,
coolycap.org.
Hetty Brown is the executive director of Cooley Cap, and we've been talking about that organization's response to COVID-19 in our community. Hetty, thank you very much again for your time today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to see more of our coverage from how our community is responding to COVID-19, you can go to our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. And coming up after this quick timeout, we're going to be speaking with the National Weather Service on another issue, and that is flooding, which our communities are no strangers to flooding, and it's happening again, and we'll talk about it coming up. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin in Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. We're taking a short departure from our COVID-19 discussions over the last couple of weeks to talk about an issue that is very important to a lot of people here in southwestern Wisconsin, and that is flooding. It is spring, and we've already seen some flood warnings that people are under, and we're keeping our eyes on that very closely. And joining us to talk about it is John Wettenkamp, who's a service hydrologist with the National Weather Service in La Crosse. John, thank you very much for joining me today.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Where do we stand right now in terms of flooding? What's the current outlook?
Right now we're seeing minor flooding along a pretty large section of the Mississippi River here locally, pretty much all along the surrounding areas here of southeast Minnesota, western Wisconsin, and northeast Iowa. And so far, it's been kind of hovering in that minor flood stage here, and is expected to do so at many locations here at least through next week, before we start to see the river levels start to fall again.
It's a little bit early to be talking about flooding in terms of the major flooding that we've seen in years past, but how does this so far this year compare to what we've experienced in previous years?
Well, this year, fortunately, it hasn't been too bad locally. As far as a large contributor to that was we didn't really have the deep snowpack in place, especially like we saw last year. So we had a little bit of dry time and kind of an ideal melt this year with warmer days and then colder nights where we dropped back below freezing. So it really slowed the spring thaw, which helped a lot as far as seeing any flood levels that would go above the minor level. So for this year, as far as we're seeing elevated river levels longer than we normally do, but as far as the river cresting at an abnormally high level, we're not seeing that this year, fortunately.
When you look back to last year, you see so much snow falling so late in the season, and sticking around for a while until it all finally melted all at once, I guess. And so, how does a situation like the polar vortex or whatever that we experienced last year kind of compare to what's going on now?
Yeah, last year we saw very cool temperatures in January, and we didn't have a lot of snow on the ground at that time either. So what that led to was a very deep frost across the region. So the ground saw some really deep frost layers. And then also those cold temperatures led to very thick ice cover on area rivers. Then fast forward to February, and we saw a lot of snow across much of the upper Mississippi River basin. So we really established a deep snowpack. So that's kind of that's really a watch out situation there. And you have thick ice cover and deep frost and very a deep snowpack with a lot of liquid kind of held up in that snowpack. Those are the areas you really have to watch out for. And last year, we did see some very prolonged flooding, and in some cases, near record flooding, and in some instances, record flooding downstream of the local area. And then we saw a really prolonged flood last year, where we stayed above flood levels for several weeks, even going on months, and saw multiple crests just working all that excess water through the system from that deep snowpack and wet soil conditions from repeated rounds of heavier rainfall over the last several years, actually.
I know it's hard to predict because it's affected by the severity and frequency of storms that are not here yet, but is there a way to kind of look ahead on the season that's before us and sort of take a best guess at how it's going to go?
Yeah, absolutely. And two of the big factors we're looking at right now that could contribute to elevated potential for flooding this year, even into the summer months, we continue to see above normal stream levels for this time of year. Obviously on the Mississippi River, we're experiencing that now, but also on some of the tributary rivers as well. And then the soil moisture continues to be very wet across the region. So especially across the local area here. So any additional or any heavy rainfall that we see this summer associated with thunderstorms or even repeated rounds of, light to moderate rain, that a lot of that rain isn't going to make it into the soil, and we'll see runoff from that. So that's something we're watching very closely, especially as we get more into the flash flood season. In thunderstorm season. The long-term climate models are showing the signal for above normal precipitation for the months April, May, and June. So that's another thing that we're watching very closely. We're seeing the signal here, just looking at the immediate La Crosse area here, about a 45% chance of seeing above normal precipitation during that time frame. So we're watching that very closely. You know, ideally, we want to see some dry time here to help bring the water levels down and also reduce that moisture that's held up in the soil. But right now, we're kind of sitting primed for potential flooding with any heavy rainfall or repeated rounds of rainfall that we see going into the summer months.
We've heard on Newsmakers over the last couple of weeks, especially last week, that the worldwide economic uncertainty is hitting our southwestern Wisconsin farmers really hard. Could they be looking at even more uncertainty owing to potential weather situations or potential poor flooding this year?
That's something we'll have to watch very closely through the spring months here, especially seeing that signal for above normal precipitation. So, yeah, it's certainly a possibility. There could be challenges again this year with the wet soils that are out there and additional rain really not soaking in. So that could be a concern here going into this year as well, given where the soil moisture is at and what we're seeing in the longer term models.
John Wettenkamp is a service hydrologist with the National Weather Service in La Crosse. John, I'm certain we'll be speaking to you as the growing season continues here in southwestern Wisconsin. But for now, I thank you very much for the information and for joining us today.
Okay, thank you.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Up next, we're talking to Barry McKnight from the La Crosse Public Library. He'll have some ideas about how to get your literary fix on while the library is closed due to COVID-19. That's coming up next here on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio's Southwestern Bureau in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. We're continuing our coverage this week of COVID-19 and trying to offer a little bit of an uplift at the end of today's show. And so, of course, we're visiting with the La Crosse Public Library and Barry McKnight, who is the Program and Community Engagement Coordinator for the library here in La Crosse. Barry, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Public radio listeners in particular would be aware of the role of libraries and the importance that they play in our communities, and maybe more so than others might miss being able to go to the library and browse through the stacks and pick out a few books to try on for size, so to speak. Talk about the interesting ways that the library has kind of shifted focus over the last few weeks to connect with its normal users, to reach out to new users, even though people can no longer visit your physical locations for the time being.
Well, you know, as you said, you know, one of the things that really makes libraries a central part of the community is that fact that really anybody across the community from all walks of life can come in our doors and check out materials or use the computers or attend a class or a program. But that very thing of bringing people in was, of course, a danger during the pandemic. But that role doesn't go away. You know, libraries are about providing access, And that really became, access and information, that really became more important than ever when the pandemic started. So, one of the things we had to shift, obviously, was we can no longer have this kind of physical presence, but people still need the library. They still need the accurate information from a trusted source. They still need access to, books and other materials, only now digitally, which is something we offered before, but it's become much more important, now that people are sheltering at home.
So you talked about digital access to books. I mean, I think people know that they can buy books from, different online sources that you can use through e-readers and other things like that. I know people are familiar with audiobooks, not only like physical CDs or in the old days books on tape or whatever, but you know, you can stream audiobooks through various kinds of either rental or purchase services. But I know a lot of people, myself included, for whom that the idea of the public library offering those kinds of digital services is a new idea. How does that work with the La Crosse Public Library?
Well, for the La Crosse Public Library, we provide a number of digital services. Some of these are available to Wisconsin residents. There's something called OverDrive, which is part of the which is offered through the Wisconsin Library Consortium, which is ebooks and audiobooks, the same books you'd find, you know, Barnes & Noble or Amazon or something like that. And we also offer some other digital services to City of La Crosse residents. Every library is going to be a little bit different in some of the things they can offer. So, for example, we have Hoopla and Canopy that we offer to City of La Crosse residents. The first one is books, audiobooks, and comics, and Canopy's movies, movie streaming service.
Oh, wow. So you can even check out movies online through the library.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so anybody who has a library card can access these services. Do they have to set up or establish an account of some kind?
Well, OverDrive is available to all Wisconsin residents with a library card. But like those others, I said, are through City of La Crosse residents. But if you don't have a library card, what you can do is actually contact your local library, or in our case, the La Crosse Public Library, and you can request a temporary virtual card that will get you through the summer, and that will let you access some of our digital services.
Okay, so you're not out of luck if you haven't. Like I've recently moved to town, and I haven't gotten a library card yet. I'm not out of luck.
No, absolutely not. In fact, you can just shoot us an email to CircDesk, that's CIRC desk at lacrosselibrary.org, and they'll ask you some questions and I'll set you up with a virtual card.
Okay, good to know. And along that line, we talked ahead of time and you've graciously prepared a few recommendations for people who might find themselves spending a little bit more time at home than usual. Hopefully everybody's spending more time at home than usual. And looking for intellectually stimulating ways to pass that time and yet ways that allow them to escape from the news of the day. So what are some of the recommendations that you've come up with, Barry?
Sure. So for our conversation, I focused on items that were available through OverDrive and kind of cover a range of topics. The first one is there is a big library read that's going on right now through OverDrive. For the book Funny You Don't Look Autistic by comedian Michael McCreary. And it's sort of a memoir about, you know, growing up, conversations he's had with folks when they learn he, you know, is on the spectrum. And copies of that book are available free on OverDrive, and you can participate in online book discussions, and there's some other resources there as well. Another thing that OverDrive offers is what's called the Wisconsin Born and Read Collection, and there's a ton of titles on there about different aspects of Wisconsin history and culture, you know, from a tour of historic bars and restaurants, which is a book called Bottoms Up by Jim Drager, to books on, you know, different Wisconsin sports teams, to, you know, a memoir, Little Hawk and Lone Wolf by Raymond Cockatosh, which is about coming of age on the Menominee Reservation during the Great Depression. It's a great, warm, and interesting memoir about his life and growing up in Wisconsin at the time. You know, and OverDrive also has a ton of children's titles, young adult, teen. There's really something for everybody on there. So those were a few I've come up with. There's one other that I'd like to mention.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That is Waking Up White by Debbie Irving. And for some folks in the La Crosse area that might be familiar with this title already, it's also a memoir, but it's about someone coming to the terms with their, you know, attitudes about race and bias and stereotypes. You know, someone who thought, you know, oh, I'm not racist, but came to understand some of the ways that perhaps they, while well-intentioned, were perpetuating some badly conceived ideas about race. It's a book that's available as an audiobook on OverDrive. It's also available through Amazon And later on in the summer, it will be available at the La Crosse Public Library because we're planning a regional read. We've been planning it for a while, and we're hoping that's going to start in August.
Yeah, once things kind of get back to normal, we'll be able to all kind of join together at the library and read that very interesting book and spend some time talking about it. And we'll certainly talk to you down the road about those programs as they become more official. But for now, you're offering some interesting opportunities to reach out to the community. I've seen really interesting things on social media, and there's an interesting oral history project that you guys are still involved with in spite of all of this. Why don't you talk about some of those offerings?
Yeah, so these were projects that had already, some of these had already been, you know, in the works, and then some of them were in response to the current crisis. And the one that has come about as a response to the crisis is done through the Archives Department at La Crosse Public Library, and it's called the Documenting Community Voices Project. And it's about, you know, that we're looking for community members to share their stories to add to our local historical record. You know, how has your life been impacted by the pandemic? What precautions you are taking? You know, it's a survey, but it's meant to kind of act as a journal entry. So we want people to use it sort of cathartically, but also for documentation purposes. It's completely anonymous, if you like, but we'd like to sort of capture those things because this is really, I mean, this is obviously an unprecedented event. It's going to be an event that will be, especially in the local reaction to it, it's going to be something that people are going to talk about for a long time.
What kind of equipment do people need to participate in that program?
They only need to, they go to our website. It's featured prominently on there, and there's a link that will take them to the online survey. And our website is lacrosselibrary.org.
Okay, lacrosselibrary.org. Now,
yeah.
I've seen on your Facebook page, we've had, in particular, we've had some live videos on a recurring basis geared toward those younger among us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just like, you know, everybody else, especially people who are working from home, we're looking at ways to connect people and bring content through different online platforms, and Facebook Live is one of them. So our La Crosse Public Library is really fortunate to have just a tremendous children's department. Our youth services librarians are just phenomenal, and they are offering virtual story times on Facebook Live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10:30 in the morning. And then also daily, we have what's called Lunch with a Librarian, where one of our YS librarians is reading a chapter or two a day from a children's chapter book at 12:30. So that's kind of for you know, kids, but we also have some things for adults. So we're starting to be putting up some online craft videos, book talks. We'll be having an online book club for a title that is available on Overdrive, IQ84 by the Japanese author Haruki Murakami. That's going to occur on April 22nd. At 6 p.m. on Skype, and if people want to participate in that, they can get the book through Overdrive and read it, and then they can contact the library to reserve their online space. And then similarly, one of the things we're going to be doing later in this month is we traditionally have a monthly show, if you will, at Turtle Stack Brewery in La Crosse called Storytime for Adults, and that's where, you know, library staff and friends of the library get together and in front of an audience read book excerpts, short stories, poems, one-act plays generally related to the theme of the month. Well, obviously, we can't do our April show due to the current restrictions on movement, so we're bringing that online, and we're going to do that at 8 p.m. on April 24th. So if people are interested in requesting a virtual seat, they can contact the library on Facebook, or they can email programteam@lacrosselibrary.org, and they'll be given a link to that online room that evening.
Storytime for adults from the safety of your own home, BYO,
absolutely.
Whatever.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So how can people, either for the adults or children's services, in addition to the Facebook page, how can people find the library?
Well, if they go to lacrosselibrary.org, we do have an event calendar, and whereas before the crisis started, it was full of all kinds of community events, we've trimmed those down, and we'll be having just sort of what we're offering online on there as well.
That sounds great. Barry McKnight is the Program and Community Engagement Coordinator for the La Crosse Public Library. Barry, once again, thank you very much for helping us sort of lift our spirits today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And this is Newsmakers. I'd like to thank our other guests today, Cooley Cap and the National Weather Service, and the valuable information they've provided. If you'd like to check out this show again or previous episodes of Newsmakers, our website is wpr.org/newsmakers. My contact information is there. You can submit ideas for future shows or questions that you'd like us to seek answers to. So for this week and for my producer, John Davis, I'm Ezra Wall. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.